Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
Hi, I'm Dimitri.
We have Brian here from Ireland. We're very happy to record this episode. Brian, can you please tell us about yourself and the company?
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me. I'm Brian Kenyon, Chief Strategy Officer with Ireland and part of the founding team. Been in cyber for just a little over two decades now, and a mix of startups and large organizations like McAfee, Blue Coat, and Symantec. And today I'm here presenting Ireland. And Ireland is a relatively new company, less than 2 years old, backed by some of the largest venture capital firms in the Valley with Sequoia, Insight Partners, Stripes, and CyberStarts. And our focus has been to deliver enterprises with control around the web browser and the user's activity in that web browsing application. So Ireland's released an enterprise browser that gives an organization full control over all the interactions a user might undergo inside a web application, what data they can access, how they access the data, where that data ultimately resides and persists, and all the other features that go around it that we'll be talking about today.
Brian, so if I refer to your product, what is the name of it?
Very simply, it's the Ireland Enterprise Browser.
And maybe why Ireland?
Yeah, so Ireland was a fun name. Obviously, starting a company, you know, in the 2000s, and more specifically in 2020, a lot of single word names have already been used. So when you're thinking about naming a company, you also have to think about things like domain names and your identity and the brand you wish to have. Ireland to us represented it, what we wanted to be for security. When we thought about security traditionally, we thought of about bigger walls, bigger guns, higher, bigger fortresses, bigger moats. In reality, we wanted to think about it differently. We wanted to think about security being frictionless, enabling a better user experience. And frankly, when you think about an island, it's where destination meets purpose. You know exactly why you're going to an island. You know exactly what your experience is going to be like, and you know what outcome you're going for. And we like that for not only an identity of who we were as an organization, but for our product as well.
As you may notice, we are podcasting about architecture. So we definitely want to dive in and understand your architecture.
Absolutely. So Ireland's pretty simple. You know, when you think about, you know, what we've seen with remote browser isolation capabilities, most of that has been either cloud or, you know, in the data center, virtualized hardware stacks that allow us to emulate that browser and then use pixel streaming to paint the user's browser window and thereby, you know, alleviating any potential code that might run locally or any potential malicious attributes or objects that might come through that web transaction. All of that has come with a lot of hardware, a lot of infrastructure, and a lot of integrations just to get it to work. Ireland's taking a completely different stance on this. And in fact, if you don't mind, I'll actually share just a brief slide on Ireland's architecture. So it starts with the core. Ireland, at its basics, is a browser, a full native browser on the end user's compute device. So Windows, Mac, Linux, Chromebooks, even iOS and Android for the mobile platforms. 32, 64-bit application. What's different about our enterprise browser is we integrate directly to the enterprise toolchain. So as you see there in the bottom left, we integrate with the existing technology tool system, whether it's the directory services for your identity, whether it's CDR systems or malware sandboxes. And then obviously we integrate directly into your monitoring and security infrastructure. So Splunk, whatever SIM you might be using or whatever data lake you're aggregating your data in to do analytics on, Ireland can stream all of those end user behavior analytics directly to those platforms. So Ireland's monitored and managed through a cloud-based management system where we're hosted in AWS and public cloud. And in that environment, you're going and not only just configuring policy, but you're also reviewing alerts, reviewing all the telemetry that's coming from the browsers. Now, the core browser itself, as you see in the middle of the screen, has a number of hooks to the underlying device underneath it. So we can perform things like device posture. We can query the OS and look for the given state. We do it continuously. So it's not a one-time type of check like you see with some VPNs or next-gen firewalls or even SASE vendors. We can actually do continuous authorization of that device and then affect policy based on it. And then on the right-hand side, you'll see less of an architecture, but more about the user experience that can be pushed through the Island Enterprise browser. As an administrator in that enterprise, you control all the elements of what a user can do in the browser, what they can upload, download, what they can copy and paste, what they can even take a screen capture off of or print or save locally. All of those functions, including what extensions can be running, what settings are available, and how the browser is configured, all configured in our management console inside the cloud.
I'm wondering, is the DLP integration with the ecosystem or is it your own DLP?
Oh, it's a great question. And so what you'll see is a lot of the capabilities that we talk about both exist inside Island natively, but we also afford them the capability for our customers to integrate to the tool sets they've already had. So from a DLP perspective, yes, we have native DLP controls built directly in Island, but we also can integrate with DLPs via API. So if somebody's uploading or downloading a file, we can use that file. And rather than relying on, you know, proxies or next-gen firewalls to break and inspect TLS and pull that file off the wire, we can just hand a decrypted version of that file to a DLP system that a customer already has, wait for the verdict via the API, and then either process that upload or download or prevent that action from taking place based on the verdict.
I'm guessing this will happen on the management system. Is it means that from the browser, it will go to the management and then go to the solution?
Yeah, so let me explain that flow to you a little bit. So one of the things that's unique about Island is we have end user context immediately when they open the browser. So imagine if you're on a Windows system connected to the domain, you open your Island browser, Island can pull that integrated Windows Author Kerberos authentication directly from the OS. And so we immediately know that this browser session is Brian Kenyon. And from that, the browser will reach up to its management tenant and pull down the policy file for Brian Kenyon. And from that point forward, everything is enforced locally. The traffic doesn't redirect through the management. It doesn't redirect through some cloud proxy that we're hosting. It's direct from the browser to the application that the user's their proper destination. And then from there, all of that's being enforced locally.
Very interesting. Brian, I have another question. The browser itself, so is it like something that I would download as I would download the Chrome browser? Is it based on some known browser framework?
Yeah, great question. So it's one of the areas we didn't actually get into architecturally speaking, but we've actually built Island's enterprise browser off of Chrome. So we've started with the open source project of Chromium, which is the foundation for most modern browsers today, everything from Chrome to Edge to Brave to Opera and many more. So we start with that same user experience that many enterprise users have come accustomed to as Chrome and Edge have become more standard. So that Chromium gives us the rendering engine. It gives us all the things we think about as a modern browser. And then what Island has done is we've made a couple modifications, essentially enabling us to have control over that Chromium code base. And then our management console and policy then infects that policy locally. So it is a full browser built off of Chromium. It's a very simple install that doesn't require user privilege or elevated privilege like admin privileges we install in user space as you would expect for a browser. So we don't require anything special to go onto the system, but it is exactly as you'd expect, a full browser local.
So you probably answered the next question, which is what is the user experience comparing to browsing using a regular browser?
Yeah.
There's not so much differences except the policy that might restrict me to install specific extensions and also visit specific website using a threat intelligence based on your architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about Island and what it can actually do for you, the reality is the whole experience can be customized for your user. Like, so I mentioned, when we understand that I'm Brian Kenyon, we understand because we're integrated to the backend directory, we understand what groups you belong to, which part of the organization you're in, because we inherit all those claims and group memberships. So we can build policy off of groups. We can build the settings off of groups. And as you can see, if I go back to the slide here, one of the things you'll actually see in the middle of our browser window is you'll see, you know, a good afternoon label there and a company label to the right in this little logo over here. We do this because this can be completely customized for the company that's using it. So the company logo here, your username here, they can provide all of your bookmarks in this little portal look and feel. So Island Enterprise Browser is where you actually go to work. And now from an experience perspective, being built off of Chromium, we're providing that exact same user experience that people have gotten used to. But because we're not doing all of the ad tracking integration to the back end, Google or Microsoft search or advertising networks, we've provided a number of enhancements to the performance. And so even with our policy running, all of that enforcement running locally, the performance benchmarks are at parity for Chrome and Edge today.
I have a follow-up question. How do you prevent users using other browsers that might be bundled with the operating system and force them always use this browser?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the, you know, obviously one of the limitations of doing the enforcement and all the policy inside of the browser is folks typically say, well, what happens if my users just decide to open Chrome or Edge or they're on a Mac and they open Safari and they go to Salesforce or Office 365? Haven't they just bypassed all of Island's capabilities and enforcements and policies? And the answer to that is not if you use capabilities like browser enforcement. So browser enforcement has been a concept that's been around for a long time, but organizations have never really taken the next step of deciding, I want to enforce a given browser before somebody accesses an application. The way in which this is instrumented has been through IDPs, proxies, and next-gen firewalls. So within those tool sets, you have the capability to do different conditional access profiles that say, for this user going to this application, I want to make sure that they can only access it with the Island Enterprise browser. And Island basically presents a rotating cryptographically signed token for authentication to that IDP. So you could verify that this is an Island browser associated with my tenant, and that is only allowed to access Salesforce. So Safari, Opera, Firefox, Chrome Edge, the user would get a nice little block page saying, please download Island or click here to launch Island and go to the site.
So let's dial in a bit more on this part.
Yeah.
How does it actually work? And also, you mentioned that when I bring the browser up, you understand who I am right now. But oh, what if you are a new employee? If I am a contractor and just give me the browser?
Love it.
And I just log in, open the browser and do whatever I want? Or there's something to be happened before?
Yeah, no, this is lovely. So let me hit both of those questions. I'll take the second question first around how does it know who I am if I'm a new employee? So the first thing to mention is, you know, Island is not available to the general public, meaning Island doesn't actually function as a full browser until you authenticate to it against a given tenant. And so, you know, in my world, I work for Island. So, you know, my email address, brian@island.io, is obviously how I log in. We use Okta for our IDP. So as I log in the morning, when I open my Island browser, my little Okta screen comes up. I type in my credentials. It authenticates me against Okta, pulls down my policy file, and knows I'm Brian. So effectively, if you were able to get a hold of the Island executable and install it on your system, you wouldn't actually be able to navigate or even use the browser until you successfully authenticate against a tenant. So now from a user perspective,
I'm not authenticating to Salesforce Office 365. I'm first need to authenticate to Island management before I can do anything with the browser.
You're basically authenticating against the organization's directory services. In your contractor example, what I would have to do today, right, is I ship a laptop to a contractor, or maybe I set up a whole bunch of VDI infrastructure and give them VDI creds to log into. In this example with Island, we would give them a download link to download the Island Enterprise browser. They download it, they install it on their system. Again, doesn't require admin privileges, so they can just very simple install. Once they execute it, they're going to get that username and password. They type in the credentials the organization's provided to them. Those credentials authenticate against the organization's tenant, presents the homepage. They click the Salesforce tab. They get single signed on into Salesforce. Their policy's running locally. Now that contractor's in an authenticated session under a governed policy within Island. Very simple.
Let's get to our next question. How would the technology work with existing SWG or ZTNA solutions and vendors? Does it replace it, complement it, or something else?
And again, we find ourselves in this wonderful area where I can say both. In many cases, we're going to sit right alongside the likes of a Zscaler or an iBoss or even a Broadcom and Blueco proxies, right? So we will follow the natural path the network wants us to follow. Now, in many cases, especially organizations that have gone cloud first, organizations that aren't happy with their web filtering or their cloud proxying capabilities, we've built those capabilities directly into Island as well. So we can leverage existing capabilities, whether it's Zscaler, iBoss, or another vendor. We can leverage other ZTNA capabilities, again, like Zscaler, Palo Alto, or an Access Security. All of that works natively with Island. We also have those same capabilities built natively inside the Island Enterprise solution. So if organizations aren't happy or thinking of changing, or perhaps are in between or thinking about adopting a ZTNA solution, we have that capability built directly in and can offer that.
So you can do URL filtering, I'm guessing, or blocks or in categories, but you don't really do remote access. You're not deploying anything on the back end of the company to connect. You may do it for SaaS applications, I'm guessing.
Obviously, we're doing SaaS natively, and then we can ride whatever VPN or ZTNA clients exist today to get inside an organization. In the next 45 days or so, 30 to 45 days, we'll be releasing our own ZTNA capabilities that allow us to deploy a component inside the customer's data center and create a tunnel out to our cloud so that that traffic can actually come back in without deploying another agent, another client, another network redirector. We'll do it natively inside the Island.
So you're saying if we do a season about SSE, we'll have to invite you back?
Sure, happy to.
So let's talk about the isolation part, because you have different tabs. We know there's bad things happening in the internet. How do you help isolate different tabs, different application? And also, do you isolate, if you isolate everything, or maybe uncategorized traffic or dangerous traffic?
Love the question. So absolutely. So what's a little bit different what Island's doing compared to the rest of the industry is, as we talked about up front, RBI has been a solution that's been around for a while, mostly focused on the virtualization of that browser environment through hardware, either in the cloud or in the traditional data center. We're doing the isolation natively on the actual device. And there's a couple ways we're doing it. First off, when RBI was really kicking around, to be fair, Chromium was not in the same security place it is today. And that's not to say Chrome and Chromium doesn't have any number of vulnerabilities that hit. We've seen three major ones just in the last several weeks. But Chromium back in the day was running things like Flash. It was running things like ActiveX. It had technologies embedded in its code base that were really worrisome. Those no longer exist. So the Chromium code base is better than it's ever been. But we at Island have made a number of enhancements to that code base to provide a higher level of protection. And so when we think about RBI as a technology space, where it's been really good for us or where it's been effective for us is when we think about isolating that 3-4% of our traffic that we don't know because it's uncategorized or it's risky, or it's potentially a phishing site. We do a really good job of redirecting that traffic to an isolation and then making sure it's protected. But where RBI has fallen down in the past is when we try to do things like, let's isolate Salesforce, let's isolate Office 365. And the way it handles those document object models or DOMs, threat sanitizes those DOMs or changes it, we end up breaking a lot of the app functionality. And we see this really, really acutely in what we call single page applications. Things like Salesforce that load the page once and then use JavaScript, React, or other frameworks that just refresh the page and fetch new data as the user's interacting with the application. When you try to do that in a remote browser technology, the user experience is really poor because those single application pages rely on a lot of client-side processing, which is different than what way web technologies worked 10 years ago. It was all server-side. Well, now it's coming back to the client. So when you try to do it on the client in an RBI solution, you get a lot of latency, you get a lot of performance impact, and you get a lot of end user experience complaints. Doing it natively inside Island, we've leveraged a number of technologies to not just isolate and protect against unknown sites or the risky ones. We can do this on any site, any application, Office 365, Salesforce. And what we're doing is we're enabling a number of mechanisms, code and protection mechanisms, everything from arbitrary code guard, control enforcement, control flow guard, making sure that JavaScript can execute safely and nothing executes outside of the given process it's in. So another great example is Island is a separate build and compilation of Chromium. So our memory footprint and our encryption schemes are different, meaning the off-the-shelf exploits that are out there for Chrome and Edge because they're publicly available don't render or work inside of our build. So we have a lot of obfuscation techniques. We have a lot of protection techniques that allow us to provide that isolation locally and across a multitude of sites.
Thank you. Very interesting. One of the questions, and it could be funny to ask, but there are still applications that require Internet Explorer 8 or Internet Explorer 9 in the organization to do different things, especially around accounting, ordering, and what's not. How do you see this browser support such use cases?
So this is a wonderful capability inside Island's enterprise browser today, is we've built in native support for these legacy applications. So using an IE compatibility mode, you through policy can say, you know what, Brian, you access 5 applications that are using ActiveX or they're using Java applets, or they're using something that requires a more legacy type of browser because it's deprecated out of Chromium. In that, we can go and essentially good list all of those legacy applications. And when my browser, Island's enterprise browser, hits that application, it actually launches it in an isolated IE compatibility mode, meaning that application is now running in its own process that's completely dedicated and not associated to any of the other tabs that are happening inside Island's enterprise browser. So we can render those applications, we can isolate them, and we can even deliver the same policy and control capabilities that exist inside Island across those legacy apps.
That sounds like you built a lot of functionality on top of the Chromium platform. But I have a question. I'm assuming that you forked the repository and you added a lot of your own implementation code. And since Chromium is an open source solution forward, how do you keep in sync your solution with what's happening with the Chromium?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we spent a lot of time architecturally thinking about how did we want to manage both that large Chromium project in C++, as well as what Island can do from a control perspective. And so architecturally, when you look at that browser capability that gets installed on the system, that Chromium piece, we've made only a few modifications to it, really just hooks where our Island engine, if you will, needs to contact that Chromium code base. So as part of the Chromium Browser Builder program, which we're a member of, we get all of the functional patches, meaning all of the updates and things that Chromium rolls out every 4 weeks, as well as early access to all the security fixes. So what you'll see from Island is from a functional as well as security patches, we release the exact same day as the other major browser vendors. So you'll see no degradation or latency in the deployment of our fixes or functional capabilities. On top of it, we are still running in a 2-week development sprint, meaning we update our browsers every 2 weeks. So we are actually running at a faster update program than the other Chromium browsers, and we're releasing those functional and security updates on the same day. Now, the only difference I'd add to this is that within Island, we give you control over when your browsers, your Island enterprise browsers, update. So you can decide by different populations of users, by different groups, when you want those browsers to update, when it forces the users to restart them, close them, reopen them. That whole experience, we give you workflow around as well.
We spend quite a lot of time in the browser. Google Documents are there. I can do entire Office 365 editing in there, Teams as well. How will be the experience of document editing with Island?
So document editing in Island is wonderful. So we've got two great options for you. So obviously, any of the main online productivity suites, whether it's Google Workspaces or Office 365, all of that renders completely inside Island's enterprise browser. And not only that, you can have full last mile control over those end user interactions. So where people can download, what they can upload, what they can edit, what they could copy and paste out of those documents, or what they could copy or paste into those documents, what they can take a screenshot of, you have full control over that. Additionally to working inside those productivity suites, Island has built the concept of secure storage. And I'll give you a great example. Imagine a contractor needs to connect to your Office 365 environment or needs to connect to your Salesforce environment. And in that application, they actually need to download a document so that they can edit the document and upload it back. In our current working configuration, if that user downloads the document inside Chrome or Edge, that document now persists on their desktop. We've lost control of it. They can upload it, they can email it, they can open it in different programs, anything else. Within Island, we've created the concept of secure storage, meaning we have a storage array that allows that contractor to download that document, save it to a secured blob of storage that never hits their local device. And then in that secure storage, they can actually launch it natively inside Island. And we've embedded think of it as an office viewer. So it renders all the office docs as well as PDFs and a couple other formats. So you can actually edit the document live inside Island's enterprise browser, save it back to secure storage, and then re-upload it, put it to the application without that data ever persisting on that contractor or remote employee's device. So documented editing, we have a couple different variations, but maximum flexibility to ensure end user experience and protection to make sure that there's no loss or spillage of that data.
Very interesting. So the next one is around bringing your own device. How about, you know, remote employees that using their own laptops? How about mobile phones?
One of the biggest usage scenarios we've been encountering at Island is both the contractor usage as well as BYOD, or remote employees that just want to use their iMac at home or maybe their iPad, and they just want to get to the applications they need to do their job as seamlessly and as frictionlessly as possible. So in those scenarios, very simple to do. The organization can email their employee a link, or the employee can go to the download site, you know, downloadisland.io, type in their organizational credentials, download the browser to the home PC, install it. We have within Island, like we mentioned before, we have the device posture capability. So you can build a device posture profile that says, I'll let you connect to Salesforce and Office 365 or G Suite or whatever application from your home device. As long as you're running Defender and you have, you know, BitLocker turned on and a couple other things, we can provide that device assessment and posture that you build policy around. And so if they meet a minimum security requirement, Island will allow them to go to the site and allow them to do the activities that you permit through policy. So this is a very quick, easy way to get those BYOD devices online. Now, as I mentioned before, we have an iOS, and that includes iPadOS, as well as Android and Chromebook support.
You mentioned browser extension, you can control them. Does it mean you can pre-publish what they're using, or you can remove certain one I don't want to use, or maybe have my own that I like to use personally?
Yeah, great question. So one of the great things that Island provides is what we like to call extension control and extension protection. So two things scare me with extensions. One is I don't want extensions I don't trust accessing applications that have critical data, critical information, PII, or recipes, or anything that may cause harm or reputation damage. So when we think about those scenarios, not only can Island provide a good and bad list of extensions, meaning we can pre-populate extensions, so we can force the installation of extensions down to the browser. We can also have a good or a bad list saying these are the only extensions allowed to access Office 365 or Salesforce. So in reality, we can actually unhook an extension from memory. So let's say I have the Grammarly extension now open, and Grammarly extension works fine when I browse to Amazon and when I'm in, you know, Workday or something else. But when I go into SharePoint, Island unhooks Grammarly because it's not an approved extension when you hit SharePoint. So we have that capability today. Runs exist today. Where we're taking it long term is think about being able to provide permissions to extensions. Because one of the things that scares me most about extensions is that publishers can update those extensions and the functionality can change. Like one of the greatest stories I've heard is somebody had a very quick application that did a, it was an extension that did conversions from pounds to kilos. Very simple, right? So you just go in there and I'm a dumb American and I have no idea what things weigh for my British friends, right? So I type in my pounds, it gives me in kilos and then off I go. 3 weeks later, that was taking screen captures and pushing them to a S3 bucket up in Amazon, right? So those extension code can change without the user knowing, and the functionality of the extension can change greatly. And so we want to provide a mechanism where you can say this extension is only allowed to do these three things. And so regardless of how that code changes or that extension changes over time, it only has the permissions to access the things you allow it to access. So we don't have that today. It's an evolutionary capability we'll move to, but the good, bad list of extensions, as well as pushing extensions for the user, is completely built in Island today.
Brian, how the organizations can get visibility or a report of attacks that were prevented by the technology?
Oh, excellent. Yeah, so one of the things we do natively inside Island is every single activity, as well as everything that executes inside the browser, has the ability to be logged and streamed to your analytics platforms, whether it's Splunk in a SIM or whether it's a data lake that you've built your own analytics on top of. We log and track everything. So if a user clicks on a URL and it spawns a process that opens a new tab, you're going to see that in your logs. If a user opens something that tried to execute code and the browser crashed, not only will we provide a crash log of why that crash happened, but you'll also see the activity in your SIM and analytics logs. And then all the way down to anti-tampering. So one of the things that our customers asked us early on is, we love the capabilities Island's bringing us, but what if the user's debugging memory? What if they're trying to debug Island while it's running, or they're using something to scrape active memory to try to pull any sort of artifacts or information that might be there? The reality is we've done a couple things to make sure that users can't tamper with Island. And if we see any of those methods being used, we create a log of it, push it to your analytics platform, and actually prevent that browser session from performing any more transactions until you clear it. So anything that we see from a tampering perspective or a malicious code inspection or a malicious code execution, we will push in through a log into your analytics.
A lot of good information. I think we're kind of done with the official part. Any questions to ask maybe?
Yeah, so I mean, you guys have, you know, looking at, you know, Island's a little bit different than the classic remote browser technologies that are out there. You guys have been on this season now and talking to vendors. There's a lot of capability here that isn't exactly part and parcel with RBI. Is there anything else that you guys would like me to touch on or talk about?
Yeah, maybe one of my questions is if someone is watching this episode and they want to try your technology, what should they do?
Oh, yeah. So you can reach out to us, you know, obviously I'm Brian at island.io, or you can reach out to us at support or sales at island.io. We are probably one of the easiest technologies to, you know, do a proof of concept with. We're no hardware, there's no network changes you have to make. You know, back in the day when I was at Blue Coat and we were selling Blue Coat proxies, you know, trying a proxy was so hard because you had to split the network, you had to take users and change your network path, and you had to do it to them and hope it didn't impact the business. We literally can install side by side the other browsers on your systems. We integrate directly to your directory services so the users can try us in a very seamless and frictionless way. And it's up and running in minutes. So very simple to do. We have a number of folks in our go-to-market team that would be ready and excited to assist anybody that's interested.
Dimitri, you actually brought an interesting point that I forgot to ask. Is the license based on browser or based on machines or based on users? Because I may have multiple devices.
Yeah, so today we're based off of users. We're keeping it very simple. We have a per-user license fee, a yearly cost subscription. You know, the user could install us across a multitude of devices. Our perspective is we would like as many Island Enterprise browsers across your organization, and just focus on the users that you're actually managing and pushing policy to is what we charge for.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to join you.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.